Shedeur Sanders, under pressure, bounces, takes his time, does it. Touchdown, Buffalo! Jinty, good cutback, lots of room. He's 40, like a rocket. Look at Jinty go, breaks a tackle. He's 20, he's 10, he's touchdown! 58 yards! Cook, end zone, caught! Touchdown, Luther Burden III! And Missouri strikes back!
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the first Burning the Red Shirt episode in weeks. We're back. There's plenty to talk about. I think specifically, Andrew, you want to get hyped up and maybe take 40 minutes to talk about a certain topic. But how are things going, man? Are you enjoying the off season? I feel like this is like the calm before the storm that is the second portal opening or the next portal opening. What's going on with you, man?
Yeah, you can kind of see already a lot of the rumors about portal stuff. Like, did you see that Quinshon Judkins is supposedly like going back in the portal?
Yeah, I think we could have some fun conspiracy, you know, think about who could enter the portal, and Judkins, I guess that rumor is heating up.
That's a fun one. But I don't know. I was vibing pretty well for a while just in terms of progressing through my research and feeling good about kind of my pace and stuff, but like all the stuff with the NCAA looking to kill our ability to bet props really has depressed me and kind of slowed my progress and my desire to kind of do a lot of things. Like, I don't know, the amount of time the older I've gotten, the more I've kind of thought about the time that I personally invest into this world and into like the CFB space, and it'd be like, I don't necessarily feel like I justify it through just playing season long games the way that season long games are currently, like the options that presently exist, the amount of money that like I can realistically win and bank on returning. Like, season long doesn't justify that, and I don't want to go back to the DFS grind. It's too much for and even I don't know, just the variance associated with it and the, like the likelihood that I'll actually get any sort of real return. Like, I don't know, that's not for me at this point in my life.
I can tell you right now, the DFS streets are tighter than ever, and it's the return on investment is just so minimal. You have to either win one of the bigger tournaments, or you just don't see any sort, especially because you have to pretty much be around the whole day unless you do just the night, which of course you love the night slate, so you might be able to finagle that better. But like, if you're doing the main slate, you got to be around for a while, which is annoying. But
I ended up down playing DFS last year for two reasons. One, what you were saying in terms of things, stuff just getting tighter, more probably better automation, better efficiency across the board, stuff like that. But also, like, I can't say with a straight face that I was actually putting in anything close to like the time and the effort that I know is needed to like grind DFS. Like, I was more or less lighting on money on fire for just my own, like, all right, like chuck an entry in here or there. I've had a good day on the prop board and stuff like that. Let's have some fun on and enter a night slate type deal. So it wasn't surprising to me that I ended up down in DFS, but like, I don't really have much interest in putting in the time and effort that it takes to be profitable in DFS. So door number three really is okay, I'm investing all this time, energy, these resources into CFB research to arm myself for when the season actually turns on, with the idea of, okay, this will enable me to do well in the prop betting streets. So like, if, I don't know. The idea that that is potentially getting ripped away from us, like, really makes me think, like, well, what the F am I doing with my minimal free time? Like, how can the ends potentially just don't necessarily feel like they're going to justify the means. I've tried to get a bunch of different opinions from people I like, respect and trust, regarding how they feel, just in terms of where this ultimately nets out. I've probably hit up like 5 different people and gotten 5 different answers. None of them overly optimistic, but like different versions of doomsday scenarios, kind of ranging from like, well, we're probably talking like PPH and offshore, or maybe we get like another year before things finally totally get wiped out. And then I've also like gotten feedback like, what, this is death, like it's over, like there's not gonna be any more prop bets, like this is, books are going to use this as an avenue to wipe out like what was not an overly profitable market for them to begin with. I don't feel like I have I'm not informed enough to like have my own personal hypothesis on how things are likely to play out. But like, none of that stuff has me super optimistic.
I think the range of outcomes is nothing happens to complete death. And there does seem to be more options that are not all that great, whether it's offshore or just completely dead. I don't think it's all state by state. Yeah. I think what's most likely to happen is there will be states that will be super progressive about it and just wipe it out, right? And then because like there were years, right, where DraftKings, maybe still the case, like you can't do DFS college football, mm-hmm. but like other states you can. I feel like that'll be the case with props. I don't think the offshore stuff will ever stop. Why would they? I think they probably make enough. And just the fact that they offer something is beneficial. Even if they barely win, it keeps maybe people on their site by offering more.
That's what I was thinking too. Like when the season actually starts, when football comes around and different operators are looking for avenues to attract new customers, you would think that, okay, if some operators are like wiping this out, others would see it as an opportunity. But it's difficult to pull apart the like state regulation and the operator's desire, like the cause and effect of these two things. Like, okay, states might say, okay, like NCAA, we're cool with what you want to do. We'll rule that this can't happen. But, and then like that is and is not, I think, correlated to what operators ultimately decide in terms of what they want to offer. Because at a certain point, I think the idea is like, okay, these markets aren't ultimately very profitable for sports books. They see that they're only able to offer them to a small slither of customers. What's the benefit to us actually offering them?
I think it is just the fact that it's just like with any site, right? Like it's tout sites and stuff. You want to be able to say that you cover everything at like a one-stop shop.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have not freaked out about it. I think if anything, we start to see stuff in 2025.
Why haven't you freaked out about it? Is it just because you're so consumed with infant duties?
I'm consumed with infant duties, but also too, right? Underdog does the whole champion contest or whatever, where you're playing against other people. Like,
yeah.
Why would, I feel like that's another way for them to be able, for us to be able to get action on college football that they can't get rid of. It's just like DFS.
That's so why would we not? Ball. Yeah.
So, and honestly, that stuff is pretty good. Like I played it in Alabama when I was visiting, because you have to do combos, or maybe you can't anymore. Now you can only do this Underdog Champ Series stuff. And it's like, I mean, it's just like pick six, you know, like on DraftKings, it's pretty profitable. And I think like, if that's our worst case scenario, then I'm not all that upset about it. And I have I have a couple people I talk to that I do stuff with yearly. They don't seem to be too alarmed. I think there's just a lot of moving pieces, and that's why they're just like, well, it's all state by state, so you could be fine. And there's a lot that has to happen for them to do it. And like, F the NCAA. Like, they're going to be nothing in a couple of years anyway. So why are we listening to what? They're not a real organization that can do anything.
Yeah. So before I rant about the NCAA, it's weird being in Jersey for this, because the two sides of the coin are being in Jersey is the best from like what is offered in terms of regulation. Like, Jersey's always been at the forefront in terms of getting legalized sportsbook entry and able to offer basically a full palette of like the full menu. But the other side of the coin is, if you're not a regulated sportsbook, there's like no gray area. Like, I can't even go, like, if I go to an offshore book and just like try and do, like, I can't sign up for an account. And I've heard that even if you have an offshore account registered in another state, you can't use it in Jersey. And then like Underdog's offerings and like all the pick'em stuff, like, I can do best ball in Jersey, like best ball NFL for Underdog, but I can't do anything pick'em. And then like New York is really limited too in terms of like their pick'em offerings. So that also, all of those realities kind of, contribute to my current state of mind, which obviously is different for other people that don't live in the great state of New Jersey. But the NCAA, so obviously fuck them. It's been beaten to death, not in a bad way, in a good way. I think it's good that like word gets out there in terms of how like garbage the argument is that like trying to get rid of player props from regulated books, like that's not good. That's going to have an inverse effect of what's being marketed, how it's being marketed, right? If you take them off of legal books, it's going to go back to offshore, go underground. Like, that is it's a likely outcome. And then from there, like, there's no monitoring, there's no regulation. It just makes it easier for people that have a desire to and a way to kind of look to do the whole Jontay Porter thing. Like, that becomes a lot easier if there's no monitoring of these things. Like, that point's been talked about enough on social media where I think anyone who actually is not just like some novice journalist who's writing an article that he doesn't know anything about, like, you would have come across that by now. My own personal theory, though, regarding this is that, so when we think about like cause and effect and the cause behind the NCAA doing this and what those losers are stipulating is like, oh, we're doing this to like protect athletes from the blowback they got on social media when they don't hit their prop or whatever. But that, like, that's not at all what's going on here. What is going on here, in my opinion, is that the NCAA sees that they are losing all of their power. They're losing, they can't win a court case to save their life. They're losing all relevancy. They know, like you just said, that their days are numbered. So they are using this as an avenue to show that they are necessary, that they are stewards of athletes' rights, and that they can kind of hold this up as a win and be like, see, we are looking out for athletes. We are ensuring their mental health and their mental well-being. We are necessary, and we need to continue to exist as a governing body, even though, like, we know, like, they don't care about athletes or athletes' rights. Like, they're doing everything they can to ensure that athletes aren't properly compensated for their for what they're doing, right? So this is like, so I don't want to be that loser that kind of just holds up a fallacy and just throws out a fallacy in terms of an argument and like refuses to argue about something. But like, this feels like the very definition of a straw man fallacy, in my opinion, where the NCAA is just holding up the social media blowback that athletes are getting from their props and then knocking down that straw man and saying like, oh, look, this is why we are getting rid of player props to ensure that this doesn't happen to athletes. Whereas like that is that's not what they're doing here. They're just trying to justify their relevancy and their continued stewardship and get like a quick win that isn't actually a win.
I don't have as strong of opinions than anything other than on the NCAA, you know, other than what I originally said, and then adding on maybe a little bit to what you there. Any final prop discussion that you want to you bring up? I feel like at this point we're just kind of a wait and see mode.
Yeah, the I would say just from a Kolendrick perspective, that loser Charlie Baker said, but I think he's referenced like when he was talking last week, he said next week, so this week is when he's going to look to start taking action in the different states that do have player props as legal presently. So you would think that, I mean, it's government, so stuff moves slow, right? But you would think like there's, we might start hearing some things in terms of just progression or lack thereof in coverage from a media perspective sooner than later, which, I mean, interesting is probably the wrong word, but I guess it'll be interesting to kind of see progression there. And then also from a Kolendrick perspective, like we started to see player props come out, like I think in June last year. It's in April now, so we're like a month away. If we weren't dealing with the scumbag, right, and this garbage, we'd be so close to getting some season long player props out there. Oh, do you think that? So it'd be interesting to see how, if there is any sort of legislation that comes from this. Like, is this going to mean we can't? I know you can't bet on the Heisman in some states, right? I don't think I could bet on it when I'm in New York, but I wonder what would be covered from this ultimately. Like betting on the Heisman is like a thing that like everyone enjoys doing that, or at least enjoys discussing that. I wonder, like, I assume that Heisman betting is, I don't know if it, like, it's not something that's being considered when people generally discuss this, but I would think that it's something
that's got to be included, right?
Yeah, you would think so. And like, I don't even care personally, but
are you thinking that maybe that helps our case? They're like, well, we don't want to get rid of, we don't want to get rid of Heisman voting, so maybe we keep. I would imagine if you're going to say anything kind of individualistic, anything that's just straight a player, then you can't be able to bet on it, which goes from props for a single game all the way to a season long type thing like Heisman.
Yeah, it's just an interesting component that crossed my mind.
Saying though that, like, hey, you know, it's only an we're only doing individual game props because that's where people will get the most irate, and it helps the safety of the player by eliminating the individual one game stuff, but not when it comes to nobody gets mad at Caleb Williams for Heisman bets, but they get mad at him over how he did against Colorado or something.
The more we talk about it, feels like there's a million different ways this could play out. I would love if we kept season long props as a thing. Like, have you been profitable there?
Yeah, I have.
It's so hard for you though, like having to do the parlay stuff. But like last year was my first year really doing them, and it was awesome. I just crushed it. But if I had to move more of my action to that because I knew that there was just less in the way of weekly, like that wouldn't be a terrible outcome.
It just wouldn't be as exciting.
I know. Yeah. Like last year, it does get fun the last week or two, kind of tracking and like seeing what you need, and then the last week it becomes like a weekly. I think I won Michael Penix under by 1 yard last year. He was at like 38.99, like crazy. I lost some dumb shit. Like somehow Quinn Ewers didn't get there because of his shoulder, even though we got like an amazing number. Quick tangent, dude. I'll never do this again because it's the worst betting experience of my life. Betting baseball season long. Like I took Ohtani home run under, thinking I have like a zillion different ways to win it. Every single night I have to now just pray that this guy doesn't, like, he somehow didn't homer against the Cardinals and their gas can pitching staff. Like, thank God. But like, what a horrible sweat. You have to do this 162 times until he goes to gambling jail or blows out his elbow or something. Like, there's nothing fun about this. Like, yes, generally betting unders is not fun. But in football, like, they only play 12 games. Like, I have to do this for 162 games with this guy.
I did MLB stuff a couple years ago with DeGrom, and I bet under his strikeouts, and he tore his hit Tommy John, and yeah. I didn't get paid on it because they said he didn't play enough games, and I bet the under. So what? I was like, fuck that. I'm not. Why am I doing this then? Like, he has to be healthy. And, like, that's part of the DeGrom shtick is to bet against him to get hurt, but that's because crazy. You think he'll eventually get hurt because he's so dynamic with his arm, but. I had some good bets. A couple years ago, I had Jahmyr Gibbs over rushing yards, and he missed it by, like, I don't know, 50 or something. But, you know, he didn't play. He barely ran at the beginning of the year, and then he didn't play much against the cream puff team they played towards the end of the year. So I ended up losing, and I think I would have won like another $2,000 or $3,000 because of it. But Damn. Yeah, I have to do all the bullshit parlay stuff, which. Maybe that's why I'm not so like upset about the prop stuff. It's like it's profitable for me, but it is a pain in the ass to have to maneuver and handle. But
totally.
Who do you think? I have a couple of thoughts on like players and teams that might be hit with some season long props. Are there some players or things that like when they come in June or July, you're going to be like, I'm ready for this under?
Dude, was this inspired by our Kyron Lacy conversation the other day?
It was not, but. No, it was not. It just came to be as a part of this conversation with the individual versus season long prop stuff.
So I started making a list the morning that all the tweets came out about the NCAA going after props, and I was like, and then I just closed it and never opened it again because I was too depressed. But yeah, I've got a list of a bunch of guys I'm considering kind of. I'm sure I'll do like overs at some point, but I was focusing on like potential under candidates initially. I've got right now, I'm up to like 9 guys with like potential numbers that I think I would be looking for.
Are you willing to disclose any of them?
Yeah, sure. I mean, a lot of them are just like guys that I'm largely fading in best ball drafts that we've kind of talked to already.
I was going to say, I have some names in mind. Let's see if I am seeing similar names to you guys, to your list.
Yeah.
I'm going to say guys that I think and tell me if they're on your list, basically.
Yeah.
So Ohio State receivers to me feel like easy pickings. Like they're going to throw up like a 1100 Emeka Egbuka or something, or like Carnell Tate or something at 900 or 800 or something. Or maybe even better, like that Jeremiah Smith, because he's getting so much steam, but we'll see. So there's those 3 Ohio State guys are top of mind. Any of those on your list?
I had Egbuka at 1,000. I was like, if I see 4 digits or 999.5, whatever, I'll take the under there.
Okay. So I'm trying to think of who was also put in, who had available season props last year, and Corum was one of them. So I would love an under on Donovan Edwards. If it's over 1,000, I mean, that offense is going to be just, I think it'll be slower and not as efficient and could potentially just not be good. So do you think Edwards would be a good under?
Yeah, that would be great. I totally buy into the idea that, like, imagine he doesn't leak out the backside in the title game, right? And he just gets stuffed by any of the 5 guys that are right there at the line of scrimmage. And then
his own offensive lineman, yeah.
Yeah, and then either he doesn't have a 5-foot hole on the second touchdown, or he's not even in the game because he got stuffed on that play, right? You know, like, the way the national title game played out opens opportunity for us now as a result.
Oh yeah, big time. And I think they think of a market and it's like, oh yeah, Michigan running back, Ohio State receiver. My other one, I was thinking Texas receivers. There's a bunch of them. I could see them throw out like a Matthew Golden, even like an Isaiah Bonds if it's high enough. There's just so many receivers, it'd be hard not to like an under there because you got to think one of them, it gets over 900.
I had both of them on my list of 9 guys. I had Golden at 800 and Bond at 900. I would take the under on either of those.
Jonte Cook is the scary one. I would avoid that one just because I think there is the potential that he is like alpha and is awesome. But I think those other two are definitely bust candidates.
Yeah, I like Jonte. I feel like he wasn't on the field a ton this past year, but you just like watch a catch or two of his, and he just looks like so twitchy, and like he's got the. Like if he is a starting receiver, like I could see him like just being a yak god, and he's not a guy I really want to bet against.
No, a lot of the Texas spring stuff has come out, and people are talking about it all across all the different podcasts. And
yeah,
everybody has resoundingly, seemingly put Cook as like he could very well be the guy, and it seems like he is the guy. And Golden's kind of in the background, second team type stuff. I mean, they're going to do a Quinn Ewers. They did a Quinn Ewers last year. Why would they not do it this year? So that's going to be up there. Yep. Was he on the list?
No quarterbacks. I started off with just running backs, receivers.
So Kyren Lacy's on the list. He's got to be. We've had the discussion which prompted this. And what was the number you come up with? 750.
I put 850.
Do we want to talk about Lacy? Because I think it kind of goes into what I wanted to talk about, which was pumping and dumping in 2024.
Yeah, sure.
I think Kyren Lacy is maybe the biggest pump and dump candidate of 2024. People have loved him. I actually just took him in this Champ Series draft. I was wondering if you would say something to me about it. But I took him in like the 11th or 12th round. I felt like at that point, like I could take a risk and maybe try to find an upside guy, which I'm trying to work on in 2024. But he definitely was getting pumped up way high by pretty much everybody. And the more I look at it, I go back and forth. But I am finding a stance on where I'm going to be, and I'm there. But maybe you start with the conversation behind Lacy and where you stand and why you like the under.
He's like the dude started off at Louisiana, right? Lafayette,
right?
Your old stomping ground. I don't know. Like I'd be much more willing to buy into an LSU receiver cresting 800,000 yards, who's like one of the freak shows that they've had in the past, like 4 or 5 star recruit. Like Lacy just feels like a guy to me that, yeah, he's going to be on the field a lot. He's probably not going to be anything close to representative of an alpha from a target share perspective. His version of a blow up game is probably like 490-1, 575-1 type deal. I think he, like, just the way I personally could see it playing out is he always, like, the LSU gets talked about as a top 10, 15 team. The offense gets talked up in terms of like Nussmeier, getting past the torch, the offensive numbers from last year continue to get referenced, and the offense gets talked up as just being a strength on the top 10 to 15 team. We talk about the players on those team coming into this year, and running back's kind of a black hole, quarterback is nuts, and then Lacy's gonna get talked about, right, as a like in a locked in role on a top 10 to 15 offense. But I don't know. I don't really see it playing out in a way that like he's likely to be just an alpha from a target share perspective. I would be much more willing to bet on CJ Daniels or who's the other guy? Chris Hilton.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know anything about the dude, Aaron Anderson, but I don't know. Nope. My argument isn't necessarily based in fact so much as he just doesn't strike me as a guy that's going to blow up.
Yeah. And I'll add on with a little bit of fact. I did some research and digging when we started talking about it. I think everybody is going to overreact to Nussmeier being only a passer, the fact that he can't run, right? And then like Neighbors and Thomas were incredible. The year before that, Neighbors was great, but like they haven't, like Brian Kelly is not like some superstar, bring on 750 plus yards for a bunch of receivers every year. And like the OC obviously left to go to Notre Dame. But like if you look at Brian Kelly's years, because I don't, that they're doing a co-OC internal promotion. So I think it's probably something similar to what, you know, the recent years at LSU, but Brian Kelly's always been like a one-star receiver and one tight end. And if you look at like amount of receivers that went for 750 plus yards in like from 2012 to 2020 or something like that, I looked, it only happened 7 times. And he had some NFL guys. I mean, like, wasn't Claypool one of them and Pittman? Like, he had some, like, legitimate guys. I don't see – so, basically, I think people are assuming that 2 guys will be good for fantasy purposes. I think you're really needing only – like, it's only going to be 1 guy, I think. And I – like you, I would hitch my wagon to CJ Daniels before I would Lacey. And I think, you know, the younger guys like the Hiltons or Andersons of the world – there seemingly is some hype around some other non-Lacey guys. So why wouldn't they have a decent shot at cracking that 750 as well?
Totally. And there's a lot of glowing stuff being said about Lacey at this point. And there's like some cool hype videos and stuff. But I don't know. Personally, I want to attribute it to him being kind of the veteran presence and the leader in the room, more so than how that is to actually correlate to production this upcoming year.
Yeah, and he is an old guy that has never done anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if he hit 750 yards, that would be, like, the total of his first 3 seasons in college football. So, like, you're also banking on a guy that now suddenly finds it in his 4th or 5th year, whatever it is, so... Speaking of the pump and dump conversation, I brought it up internally just chatting with you about it yesterday. Are we really believing in Robert Freeman at Utah State, the little JUCO transfer that is now supposedly going to be that like little possession receiver role at Utah State?
Yeah, so the an effect of the cause that was NCAA coming after props is I have backburnered a lot of my first party research and offshored it to so many of our peers' podcasts that they do. Jared and Josh, right on Chasing Natty, that's where they talked about Robert Freeman. So when we did our first champion series like a week or two ago, there was like one or two guys where I was just like, is this an effing placeholder? And Freeman was one of them when I think Zach from Fantasy Points took him. And I meant to research it, and I just Googled. I was like, oh, okay, Utah State, JUCO, cool. Sounds good. Good hit, sure. I need to come back to that, and it never did. And then I was listening to Chasing Natty. Do you think Jared made up those quotes? Did you listen to this?
I did, yeah. Chasing Natty, it was a really entertaining episode.
Is that
I
don't part think of he made up. Up?
You know, Jared is great. I think he is so positive that he inadvertently pumps and dumps. And I know there's no maliciousness to it, but I did think the quotes were quotes. Like, I don't think he made any of that stuff up, obviously.
Yeah.
But
I couldn't find them.
Well, you know what it is? It's Nick, you know, Nick Winning Edge finds stuff like crazy.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't shock me if he went to some dark secret web and found those quotes. You know, I do understand where the love comes from, right? Babage brought him up to me before Jared even as like a replacement. I think he had talked to Josh a bunch about it. They've raved about this guy, the team, the players, etc. I don't know, man. It's just the JUCO, at least it is JUCO to Mountain West. It's not like JUCO to P4. The other guy that I wanted to bring up was who I took, and I actually believe has more of a shot of being a bust, and that's Chris Tyree from our good friend of the show, Chris Tyree at Virginia. You buying that hype?
I don't want to. I like Malachi Fields. I like seeing Calandria chuck 40-yard passes and just hope that Fields is out there. I don't understand. So you look at the season-long stats of the Virginia receivers last year, Malachi Washington and Fields, and this has also been discussed on a bunch of the podcasts of our buddies as well. how Malik Washington, how he got like just an obscene amount of targets last year, that and a lot of them were like very close to the line of scrimmage, and then like Fields was clear number two. His targets are a lot of like deeper shots, right? So the idea is like, okay, if we can copy and paste to next year, Fields probably isn't getting a huge increase on his targets, but maybe it's more that like that target share that we're copying and pasting for Washington is attributable to the role on the team, slot receiver and whatnot. In walks your boy, Chris Tyree. He still has dual eligibility.
He does.
I love that.
You know, we're a fan of it. Yeah, that's all I gotta say.
Like, the thing I don't understand is like watching Virginia games last year with Calandria, I feel like I don't recall him just dumping the ball off to Malik Washington all the time. Like, I feel like the dude was just acting like a lunatic on the field and throwing it downfield every play. I would love to parse the difference in like ADOT and targets and stuff like that between the two Virginia quarterbacks. Like, there's a lot unknown about that team. And it's weird. It's funny that we're now considering like that passing game in any way desirable, considering how much we really didn't like Tony Elliott and a lot that he did, especially in his first year at Virginia. But like now I like Malachi Fields, and there's something to be said about the potential target share that could be coming Tyree's way as well. But like, I don't know. Did you catch games of your heated rivals last year? Did you catch Virginia games?
They played a lot of course I did. They played a lot of midweek stuff, and yeah. I'll give them credit. Like, Calandria is a fun young quarterback that like, I think he could turn out to be like a very good college quarterback. So I did watch, I was pretty entertained. Looking at some of the advanced stuff, 8 out of 8 yards, that's not short, right? Like, that's a decent sized target length, right?
For who? Is that for Washington?
For Malik.
No, for Malik Washington?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it is. I'm again, no more first party research for me right now. This is all coming straight from our friend's pods. I thought that they were like, there was talk that Washington had like a pretty low depth of target, but maybe I'm wrong.
This is per PFF, and that's why I'm like I was a little interested. 700 yeah. yards basically of yards after catch. I mean, I think what happened was there was a lot of short stuff, but then Calandria also just chucked it deep as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy had 100 yards in like 7 or 8 straight games to end the season. Like, yeah, you don't do awesome. That. You can't possibly do that by just running bubble screens and stuff, right? Like, I'm not saying these other podcasts are wrong, but it does. It's like, I don't remember what exactly it was. It's almost like we need to go back and just watch a game or two of it. But they did chuck it a ton. And I did have, as funny as it sounds, they're completely different body types. I would have gotten confused with like which one was which, like on the field. Like, just because they just were chucked the ball nonstop to both of them. It always felt like it took me an extra second every time I watched it. Oh, okay, that's Washington. Oh no, that's Fields. You know, like, because they it seemed like they threw every route to everybody, but I don't know. Maybe that's just, you know.
Yeah, there's certain, my stance right now, uneducated and just mostly off of vibes, is that like there are plenty, or maybe not plenty, but there's a subset of programs who, when I'm like starting my research on a daily or season long level, I'm like, okay, I want to target the running back here, the inside receiver here, the outside receiver here. Like, a lot of us play that game, right? It's just a good game to play, I think. I don't know. I don't necessarily feel super strongly that there is established tendency with UVA. That's something that we can and should be doing with the program at this point. I'd like to see a more of a sample size than just what I believe to be. I think we're just talking about 1 year, right? Like, Washington commanded all those targets for 1 year.
Yeah, I don't remember, even like with the great Robert and I years, I don't ever remember guys getting 140 targets, like 110 catches and stuff like that.
The OC, like, is that dude? It's Des Kitchens.
Oh, no, a different guy?
Yeah. Well, the OC for Elliott, across his first 2 years, it's that dude Des Kitchens, who had like a super NFL-y and boring background before he was at UVA. Yeah.
We'll see. I'm looking at just some background stuff. Interesting. I think honestly though, Malachi Fields does feel like a worst case scenario. Just replicate what he did last year, which is solid. And it doesn't seem like you're paying a ton for it. I'm not completely sold on Tyree just because, I mean, we've seen him for 4 years at Notre Dame. Now, albeit, right? I just talked about Notre Dame not really producing star receivers, but like, he's like Lacy. He's literally, his best year is last year where he had 26 catches for 484 yards. Like, what are the chances that in year five, both Lacy and Tyree become like top five round values? Like, I'm willing to throw, you know, a random late teen, early 20 round draft pick on it here and there, but for Tyree, but I don't know. I'm not sure I'm going to put all my eggs in that basket. And we might totally hear so much differently after all these spring reports. What if, and this is a portal conversation, what if Calandria joined the portal in 2 weeks? Like, ooh, do you want Tony Musket throwing the football to anybody? Like, so I think Calandria is important to this offense.
Agreed. And you could see, like, why would he and Musket both want to stay at UVA? That's a nice sneaky conspiracy theory for Portal.
He apparently, I think it's Musket, has been hurt. So it's really just Calandria right now. But I don't know. If I'm Calandria, I had a great freshman year. Like, I think people can see talent and be like, yeah, I want that guy on my team. NIL, like, I don't think Virginia's shelling out big bucks. Like, why wouldn't Calandria entertain it? Don't have to deal with the BS of Tony Musket. Go to maybe a bigger program or get more money. I could see it.
Totally.
I mean, I just was going to ask you, here's another guy that could be an interesting departure that I know and love. Donovan Smith, Houston. You think maybe they see Zion Chris come on in and maybe he gets a little bit of the writing on the wall and he transfers to like Utah State?
So in terms of order of operations, that one fits the mold a little better, right? Because it's like outside of the only thing that gets Calandria to transfer in the next 2 weeks is if he is reached out to by another program. Like, it's not like Musket's not doing spring practice, right? So like, it's not like he's gonna go and win the job and Calandria's gonna be like, fuck, I'm out of here type deal. But Donovan Smith is not in. He's not participating in practice, right? Zion Chris is. Maybe he sees the writing on the wall type deal. I think you can think about it the same way with UNLV, with Sluka not being there. The guy whose name I can't pronounce, Haj Malik Williams or whatever. Like, he is there right now. It would have been cool to see Williams understand that he's not going to win the job and then go somewhere else. Like, but unfortunately, it feels like both there and at UVA, the most likely scenario is both QBs stay and Williams and Musket probably sit on the bench. But I don't know. It's so tough to trust UVA to actually play Calandria for 13 games or 12 games. But getting back to Donovan Smith, yeah, I think it's a good example of someone who could be out the door within a couple weeks.
Do you ever draft thinking like there's a couple good options of guys that like you're drafting for future forward thinking, like maybe this guy lands at a spot, which would be Marquez Cooper, mm-hmm. Rashad Amos. They're just in the portal. Nobody knows what's going on. Do you ever draft like that? Like, you know, hey, Cooper could go to San Diego State and that would be awesome.
You know, I do. I've taken Cooper in both these drafts.
Have you? I had not see where you took him. 15th round.
Yeah. I saw Mike take him in like the 22nd round in the like $5 best ball we did before Champion started, and I made a note of that. I'm like, ooh, I'm doing that next time. So that I will do. I will, when a guy's already in the portal, or we know he's entering the portal, I'll take a shot if I feel decent about the price and that there could be payoff, and I'll take him, because just from the perspective of, like, we're talking about, like, one, there's just one step he needs to take, right? It's just one thing that needs to happen. Cooper needs to go to San Diego State or another G5 school and just eat. But did you see, I don't know if this is a made up factoid or not, but I saw, like, when I Google and search for Cooper's name every day, now that I'm invested, hoping that there's some theory out there. I saw that supposedly he is the only running back in the FBS to run for 1,000 yards each of the last 3 years, which is, like, a good trivia question if that's true.
I believe it.
Yeah,
I did not know it, but I believe it.
Yeah, but I mean, when you draft him in the middle of rounds, right, you're just looking for one domino to fall, which I think is fine. The game I won't play, though, is where I need a guy to, like, lose a job, enter the portal, go to another school, and that school has to be one where he, like,
kind of wants a good
job. It's too much to ask for. Like, and I feel like that you're really playing with too much fire.
Is that CJ Donaldson, basically?
I don't know. But he keeps going so late that does interest me.
He just went 23rd round, the beginning of the 23rd round in
this past week. I enjoy kind of playing some of the late round running back games in CFF best ball, where I have a soft spot for the guy, or like the guy's talent, and I'm like, the one thing that you need there is, like, okay, maybe just the starter goes down, or hey, I was right about his talent type deal. Like, do you see, I was just on the clock and I made a pick. Did you see?
You did. You kind of, and this is one of those, you're listening to too many podcasts right now, because I know you're listening to, and I'll give a plug here because it's worth doing, Josh and Mike and Froton and I think it's Zach Hall. They started the Fantasy Points podcast. I think it's called All Access. It's been great. I listen to it every week. It's been 2 weeks. I've listened to both. I thought this most recent one about quarterbacks was very interesting. Just systems and thinking about, like, coordinators and play calling and stuff like that. I thought it was very interesting. But to get to the point, Teron Keith was somebody that Froton likes, right? In the first episode. But you're buying that, huh? You buying Western Kentucky running backs right now?
How? So first year amnesia is supposed to be where you forget all the stuff associated with your kid's first year, because, like, otherwise no one would ever have another kid. You're not supposed to forget that we talked about Teron Keith on our pod a couple months ago, where I was talking about how I want to play in a league where it's actually deep enough where I could draft him and have it being worth my while, and I could actually, like, play him in my lineup.
So are you saying that you had it first?
By no means am I purely an originator. I think that, like, trying to just originate everything yourself is, while I'm very prideful, it's also foolhardy. I was when Froton took Keith and the dude from UAB, BB, back-to-back in our first champion series, I was like, fuck, I'm so fucking jealous. I wanted both those guys. I had, like, six guys in my queue, and he took both of them. But yeah, dude. Teron Keith, dude, he is borderline, not legendary, but those Maction weeks where they pretended at Bowling Green that Tyrion Stewart wasn't, like, out for the year with a broken leg, and we got Keith rushing props at, like, 22 yards, and he went for, like, 200 all purpose or something. Like, that leaves that dude has a very soft spot in my heart, and I'm happy to kind of make a bet on him for this upcoming year.
I know he catches passes.
Yeah.
But we'll see. The problem is, I don't think anybody knows what that Western Kentucky offense is going to look like, hence why everybody on that team went from being, like, a top five rounder last year to 10 to 20th rounders. But I find your draft, this second series draft, to be super interesting. None of the guys that you've drafted have proven anything in college football.
No, it's an awful team.
I mean, no, literally starting in the ninth round, you have taken guys that are like, they're going to be the next man up, and they had like a great bowl game, like Gio Lopez, Ricky Hunt. Jonte Cook is kind of like that up and comer. You took Freeman, you took Cooper, who's in the portal. You took Nick Nash. I'm waiting for Jay Butterfield. You haven't taken him yet, but it's coming. I know it is. You took Ross Simmons. You took DT Sheffield. You took Ruben Owens. Like, you've literally cornered the market on potential.
You're not going to shout out my Olympic sprinter, Nick Harbor?
Nick Harbor as well, another guy. I mean,
the guy who refuses to even get on the field in spring practice because he's too busy. He's training for the Olympics.
It's an interesting team. I am very excited to see how it plays out. It'll be better than mine, I'm sure of it. But it'll be interesting. I mean, I took a Marquez Cooper light version, Henry Parrish. What did you think of my Henry Parrish pick?
I don't know. It's not really for me. Like that, it was a little frustrating betting against him last year because he got there a couple times in stupid ways when the sports books thought that he was like the Miami RB1 and it was a three-man committee. But I subscribe to the belief that this dude's a committee back and probably isn't even overly likely to lead the committee. It's Lane Kiffin. Like, he's not done building out that RB room in the portal if he brings in Parrish. Like, the idea that it's just going to be Parrish and Bentley and like a freshman or whatever, like if we think that this upcoming spring portal window is going to have a ton of entries into it, you don't think that the Portal King's going to go out there and poach a real running back?
I mean, go get Judkins.
Bring him back not? Home. Yeah.
You know, I don't put it past anybody. I mean, the guy at Iowa did it, right? Like, there's nothing they could do about it, right? Like, he went and got his money and then was like, thanks for it, and came on back. I don't know. The problem with the Ole Miss stuff in Parrish is that he's not really I talked about on Chasing the Natty with Jared and Josh. He's not really like a lead back type.
Yeah.
But the problem there is too that like Bentley is not a lead back type. Riscano is young. Is this a place where you take a last round pick on Riscano? Like, because maybe he fits a better mold of like a real full-time running back? Or do you just, it sounds like you're just in a void.
Probably avoiding. That offense probably continues to skew more passing, you would think. No reason not to, right? They've got weapons for days. As much as I've hated on Jackson Dart because he's not Spencer Sanders, like, I've lost enough money at this point where I feel confident and okay talking about a Jackson Dart offense being good. But you would think that they skew more passing this year, especially if they're working with a set of running backs that, okay, we'll get them 25 carries and 8 apiece or whatever.
I'm going to go completely random here, a guy that you took, but I'm interested in for dynasty purposes. If Abu Sama was available in your like offseason supplemental dynasty league draft, how high would you be willing to pick him? This is a weird this would be a weird freshman year class. It feels like there's Jeremiah Smith, there's the Florida quarterback, DJ, what is it, Lagway? And then it's like what? Like Julian Sayin. I have a hard time buying in on freshmen that are not like the superstar types, like the Jeremiah Smith. Because you could take Sayin, who's great, like in previous years, you would just take the Ohio State quarterback, you'd be good 2 years later. With the portal being the portal, I don't know how much I want to put my money on the freshman that I have to wait a year or two on.
It's a good question. Top three feels right.
One of my favorite pastimes is every offseason going through and seeing who's available in these supplemental drafts. And I found that he is available in one of them. So I was interested to see where you would take him. But any final thoughts or closing topics you want to discuss?
Unsurprisingly, looking at your team, I can get on board with like maybe 1.5 picks in this draft. Like,
is this the champ series?
Yeah, I don't understand what you're doing.
Who are the 1.5 picks?
Well, you stole the Rutgers guy from me. So nice.
My guy, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, no one's taking a Rutgers guy in the fifth round. I can't let it slide. I don't get him on the way back. But obviously I was wrong. About a round or two ago, and we're in like the 24th round now, I was searching for Michael Harrison. And I tried like five different spellings. It looks like he was gone in round 13.
Yeah, I took him, man. 13th round. I'm taking all the Titos. Give me all the tight ends that aren't actual tight ends.
The dual eligibility. I didn't realize you subscribed to it as hard. Did you see my dual eligibility guy?
It's Nick Harbor, right?
I have another.
Who is it?
Jamal Haynes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I have to admit, I don't know much about the Georgia Tech offense. So, like, sometimes I just avoid guys because I'm like, I don't even know if he's still there. And Haynes is one of those guys for me.
It sounds like you haven't watched a lot of Georgia Tech. I was very much willing to admit I was wrong on Haynes King after he came out and really was throwing for a bunch of yards to start the year. But, dude, like, watching the bowl game, that dude's – like, he still throws like there's something severely wrong with his, like, shoulder or elbow or something. Like,
right.
He looks like he's going to need a visit to Dr. James Andrews or Dr. Reattach It after every time he throws a pass. But like their offense, they definitely do a lot of interesting motion and stuff, and like they do things in a way that makes it not predictable, I would say. But so much of their game is predicated on, like, at the end of the day, we're gonna use Haynes's, we're gonna use the athleticism of the two Haynes, right, of Jamal and Haynes King, which. I mean, you saw like as the year progressed, it really felt like they kind of recognized that Jamal Haynes is that dude, and they should look to get him the ball as often as they can. Love that wide receiver eligibility, right? Running back receiver.
Well, the nice thing about it is he's actually he's not like a Tyree where it's like a flyer and you get dual. Like, he's a legitimate player that has dual eligibility, which is nice. I just am not going to touch Georgia Tech players, period, because of their schedule, which has been harped on a bunch. Like, have you actually seen their schedule? It is ferocious. I mean, like, they have an easy start, but they have three bye weeks because of the week zero game against Florida State. They play, like, the end of their season is Notre Dame at Virginia Tech, then off, then Miami, then off, then NC State, then at Georgia. Like, if you're playing redraft, that is, I don't know how often you're going to play him. Now, this is best ball, so different story.
Yeah.
But I just, like, why bother when there's other options is more where my head's at.
I don't know. I just see the dual eligibility and I black out. And play.
Well, maybe one of these days I'll get to more than 1.5 players that you like. You don't like Dampier or Sorsby?
That one was fun. That Dampier is fun. I think I actually had him in my queue too. It was like, okay, if I really need a QB, like, well, let me make sure I bookmark this guy. But I mean, I don't think we have enough time to really get into it right now. But yeah, dude, like these, I mean, we just subscribe to different schools of thought.
Do you remember how good do you think Jacob Zeno was last year?
Quality. I don't have a problem with Zeno.
Okay. I was going to say, you know, he had six games of 26 fantasy points or more. That's pretty good. The best ball. Really? Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
The thing is, it's like you forget about it because it happened at the beginning of the year. Like, he started off insanely hot and then kind of fell off. You know, he had 26 points against Georgia. So, well, I think we've run the full gambit of things to talk about on this first podcast in some weeks. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We'll be back hopefully on a weekly basis. I have an infant that goes on sleep strikes sometimes. It just makes things a little bit more difficult. But hope everybody has a great week, enjoys, and is looking forward to the transfer portal. Thanks, everybody.
Fuck the NCAA. Peace.